A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
You know, Korn, this whole show runs on GPU compute, and we wouldn't be here without Modal.
Seriously. And that's what powers all our text-to-speech. Everything you're hearing right now.
They're an AI infrastructure platform. Developers use them to run GPU workloads in the cloud with zero infrastructure headaches.
If you're building anything with AI, check them out. Modal.com. Alright, we are diving into a topic today that I think hits home for just about everyone listening, especially in the strange social landscape of 2026. Daniel sent us a text prompt that really gets to the heart of how we function as social animals. He wrote, "How many friends and close friends does the average adult actually have, and what is considered a healthy number? Does this vary by individual and culture, or is there a common baseline?"
That is a fantastic prompt. It is one of those things where we all have a gut feeling about our own social lives. But when you look at the empirical data and the evolutionary biology behind it, the reality is often surprising. By the way, fun fact for the listeners, Google Gemini 3 Flash is actually writing our script today, so we are leaning into the cutting edge while we discuss these very primal human connections.
I love that. Using a high-level AI to help us understand why we still need to grab a coffee with a human being. It is a bit poetic, but before we get into the heavy data, I want to start with something called the friendship paradox. It is this mathematical reality that, on average, your friends probably have more friends than you do. It sounds like a personal insult from the universe, but it is actually just a statistical bias, because people with many friends are more likely to be in your social circle.
It is a classic networking effect. But it creates this psychological pressure where we look around and feel like we are falling behind some invisible leaderboard of popularity. In reality, the numbers are much smaller than most people realize. When we talk about the average adult in 2026, the definition of friend has become so diluted by digital platforms that we have to start by drawing a line in the sand between a contact and a reciprocal relationship.
Right. Because I have 2,000 followers on certain platforms, but if I needed someone to help me move a couch, or, more realistically, help me get to the kitchen for a snack, that list of 2,000 drops down to about 3 people very quickly. So, let us establish the scope. What are we actually looking at when we say friend in a sociological sense?
Sociologists generally look for reciprocity and meaningful contact. In 2026, the data shows the average American adult has about 16 friends total. That is the broad circle. But if you look at who they would actually hang out with one-on-one, that number halves to about 8. And then you get to the core, the close friends. That number has been in a freefall for decades. In 1990, the majority of people reported having 5 or more close friends. Today, the average is down to 3.6.
3.6. That 0.6 must be the guy who only texts you back every third time. But seriously, that is a massive shift in just 35 years. We are talking about a significant contraction of the inner circle. Is there a biological reason for this, or is it just modern life being a meat grinder for relationships?
It is a bit of both, but the biological framework is really where the foundation lies. We have to talk about the Dunbar number. This was proposed by anthropologist Robin Dunbar back in the early 90s, and his theory was based on the size of the primate neocortex. He found a direct correlation between brain size and the size of the social group that species could maintain. For humans, that theoretical limit is 150.
150? I feel like I can barely remember the names of 150 people, let alone maintain a stable relationship with them. How does that breakdown look in practice? Because it is not like we have 150 people all at the same level of intimacy.
No, it is a layered hierarchy, almost like a set of concentric circles. The innermost circle is the 5 intimates, your absolute core support group. These are the people you call at 3 in the morning. Then you have the layer of 15, which are your good friends. Then 50, who are your social friends, the people you might have over for a barbecue. And finally, the 150, which are your stable functional relationships. Beyond that, you are getting into the territory of acquaintances or people you just recognize.
What I find wild is the metabolic cost of this. The brain is an energy hog. Maintaining a relationship requires tracking a massive amount of data. Their history, their preferences, their current emotional state, your shared history. It is a huge cognitive load. Is that why the brain caps it?
Essentially, yes. Every person in that 15 layer requires a certain amount of regular interaction to stay in that layer. If you stop putting in the time, they naturally drift outward to the 50 layer or the 150 layer. There is a study from 2018 that suggested it takes about 50 hours of time together to move someone from an acquaintance to a casual friend and over 200 hours to make them a close friend. In a world where people are working longer hours and spending more time commuting or on screens, those 200 hours are becoming increasingly scarce.
So we are literally running out of the time currency required to purchase close friendships. That explains the friendship recession Daniel mentioned in his notes. But here is the thing that caught my eye in the recent data, the zero trend. We are seeing a huge spike in people who report having zero close friends.
It is staggering. In 2026, roughly 12 to 15% of adults report having no close friends at all. For men, that number is particularly grim. It is about 15%. Compare that to 1990, when only 3% of people said they were in that position. We have quadrupled the number of people who are socially isolated at the highest level of intimacy.
And that has to have a physical toll, right? I mean, we know loneliness is linked to all sorts of health issues, but what is the sweet spot? If 150 is the max and zero is the danger zone, what should we be aiming for to actually be healthy?
Research from 2025 and 2026 suggests that 3 to 5 close friends is the optimal number for mental health and social resilience. If you have at least one truly close, supportive friend, your risk for depression and chronic stress drops significantly. But 3 seems to be the baseline for what researchers call social redundancy. If one friend is going through a hard time or moves away, you still have a support structure.
It is like having a backup generator for your soul. But does this vary by personality? I am a sloth Herman. I enjoy my quiet time. If I have 2 close friends, am I doing it wrong? Or is there a version of this where an introvert has a perfectly healthy life with a smaller network than an extrovert?
That is where the individual variance comes in. The Dunbar number is a cognitive ceiling, not a floor. Introverts often prefer a much tighter inner circle, maybe just 2 or 3 people, but they invest more deeply in those few bonds. Extroverts might push right up against that 15 layer of good friends, but the intensity of each individual bond might be slightly lower because the time is spread thinner. The cool metric isn't necessarily the raw number, but the sense of social satiety, the feeling that your social needs are being met.
Social satiety. I like that. It is like being full after a meal. But how does culture play into this? Because I imagine a close friendship in Tokyo looks very different from one in Rio de Janeiro or small-town America.
This is one of the most fascinating areas of recent research. There is a concept called relational mobility. In high-mobility cultures like the United States or Brazil, it is very easy to make new friends. You meet people at work, at the gym, at a party, and you can form a bond quickly. But the flip side is that these relationships are often more fragile. They are based on shared interests or current circumstances. If you change jobs or hobbies, the friendship might fade.
Right. The work friend who you were inseparable from until one of you got a new gig, and then you never spoke again. It is a very disposable model.
Whereas in low-mobility cultures, like Japan or parts of Germany, it is much harder to break into a social circle. It might take years of consistent interaction to be considered a close friend, but once you are in for life. There is a much higher level of mutual obligation and what they call all-weather support. In Japan, adults tend to have fewer close friends on average than Americans, but they report higher levels of stability in those relationships.
So it is the classic quality versus quantity trade-off, but on a societal scale. In the West, we have these broad, porous networks that are great for finding opportunities or new ideas, but maybe not as good for deep emotional security. In collectivist cultures, it is the opposite. The network is tight and strong, but it can be restrictive.
And we are seeing those collectivist models under pressure too. even in places like Latin America, where familism, the idea that family and close friends are the primary social unit, is strong, urbanization and digital life are thinning those bonds. But the biological imperative remains the same. Whether you are in a high mobility or low mobility culture, your brain is still looking for those five core intimates.
Let us talk about the gender gap for a second, because the 15% of men with no close friends is a haunting statistic. Why are men struggling so much more with this? Is it a lack of social skills, or is it something structural in how men are taught to bond?
The data suggests it is largely about the type of bonding. Women are more likely to engage in face-to-face bonding, sharing emotions, talking through problems, and providing direct emotional support. Men tend to engage in side-by-side bonding, doing an activity together, watching a game, working on a project. Side-by-side bonding is great, but it is often less resilient to life changes. If the activity stops, the bond often dissolves because there wasn't a foundation of emotional disclosure.
So if the softball team folds, the friendships fold. That makes sense. It is also harder to say to your buddy, "Hey, I'm really struggling with my mental health right now," while you are trying to hit a curveball. There is a vulnerability gap there.
And in 2026, we are seeing a push to change that, but the structural issues remain. Men are less likely to receive weekly emotional support from their friends. Only about 21% of men report getting that kind of regular check-in, whereas for women, the number is significantly higher. That lack of emotional maintenance means the friendship doesn't move into that deep, intimate Dunbar layer.
It stays in the 50 layer or the 15 layer, which is fine when things are going well, but it doesn't help you when the wheels fall off. Now, I want to pivot to the digital aspect. We have all these tools that are supposed to make us more connected. 2026 is the peak of hyperconnectivity. Does having 500 digital connections help maintain our Dunbar layers? Or is it just a distraction?
It is a double-edged sword. Digital tools are incredible for maintaining what sociologists call weak ties, those people in your 50 or 150 layers. It allows you to stay in touch with a high school friend or a former colleague with almost zero metabolic cost. You see their photos, you know they had a kid, you feel connected. But there is zero evidence that digital interaction can replace the high-cost, high-reward maintenance required for the inner circles.
Because you can't hug a profile picture. Or more importantly, you can't have a five-hour conversation that goes into the deep, dark corners of your life over a series of likes and comments.
Precisely. In fact, there is a risk that digital interaction gives us a false sense of social satiety. We spend all day interacting with hundreds of people online, and our brain gets these little hits of social dopamine, so we don't feel the hunger to go out and do the hard work of meeting a close friend in person. But it is like eating celery when you are starving. It fills the stomach for a minute, but there is no real nutrition there.
I have definitely felt that. You finish a day of connecting online, and you feel more exhausted and alone than when you started. So, if we are in this friendship recession, and we know the numbers are dropping, what is the path out? How do we actually apply this Dunbar framework to our lives?
I think it starts with a network audit. Most people have never actually sat down and looked at their social circles through this lens. If you look at your life and realize you have 50 acquaintances but zero people in that five-person intimate circle, that is a massive red flag for your long-term health. The goal isn't to get more friends. It is to reallocate your time to the right layers.
It is like an investment portfolio. If all your capital is in penny stocks, the weak ties, you are going to get crushed when the market turns. You need some blue chip, long-term bonds in that inner circle. So, how much time are we talking about? If I want to move someone from a 15-layer friend to a 5-layer friend, what is the maintenance ratio?
The research suggests you need a minimum of 1 to 2 hours of high-quality, focused interaction per week to maintain a close friendship. That sounds like a little, but when you multiply that by 3 or 4 friends, plus a spouse, plus kids, plus work, you see why people struggle. It requires intentionality. You have to schedule it. The idea that friendships should just happen naturally is a myth that works when you are 10 years old and have nothing but time. As an adult, friendship is an act of will.
It is a job. A good job, but a job. I think about the people I've stayed close with, and it is always the ones where we have a standing thing. A monthly dinner, a weekly call, a tradition. Without that structure, the drift is inevitable.
And we shouldn't forget the role of physical proximity. One of the biggest drivers of the friendship recession is that we are more geographically mobile than ever. We move for jobs, we move for cheaper housing, and we leave our social networks behind. While video calls are great, they don't provide the same oxytocin release as being in the same room. There is a biological component to being in someone's physical presence, smelling their scent, seeing their microexpressions, the possibility of touch, that cements a bond in a way that pixels just can't.
So, if you're listening to this and you're feeling that social hunger, the move isn't to go join a new social media platform. It is to look at the people you already know, the people in your 15 layer, and pick one or two to really invest in. Go for a walk, have a long dinner, do the boring work of being present.
And don't be afraid of the awkwardness of reaching out. One of the most common reasons people don't deepen friendships is the fear of being too much, or the assumption that the other person is too busy. But the data shows that almost everyone is feeling this same recession. Most people are sitting at home wishing someone would ask them to do something. Being the one who initiates is a superpower in 2026.
Plus, if you are a man, you are doing your buddy a literal life-saving favor by forcing him to have a real conversation. It is basically healthcare.
It really is. There was a famous study that showed social isolation is as bad for your health as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. We spend so much time worrying about our diet and our exercise, but we ignore the fact that our social network is a primary predictor of how long we will live and how well our brain will function as we age.
It is wild how we have pathologized so many parts of our lives, but we still treat friendship as this optional extra. Like it is a hobby, like stamp collecting, but it is not. It is the infrastructure of being human.
I also think we need to address the best friend decline. In 1990, 75% of Americans said they had a best friend. By 2025, that dropped to 59%. The loss of that singular primary peer connection outside of a romantic partner is a huge blow to emotional stability. It means we are putting all of our emotional eggs in the basket of our spouse or partner, which creates an immense amount of pressure on that one relationship.
Yeah, your spouse can't be your everything. They can't be your sounding board, your therapist, your gym buddy, and your co-parent all at once without something snapping. Having those outside Dunbar layers actually makes your marriage or partnership healthier because it provides perspective and relief.
It provides a diversified emotional support system. When we look at the cultural variations again, you see this in collectivist societies where the village isn't just a metaphor, it is a functional reality. The burden of support is spread across a wider group. In our hyper-individualist Western world, we have privatized our emotional lives, and we are seeing the results in the rising rates of anxiety and despair.
So, let us talk about the future. As we move further into the 2020s, we are seeing the rise of AI companions. We are seeing people form real emotional bonds with large language models. Does the Dunbar number expand to include non-human entities? Or does that just further erode our capacity for human connection?
That is the big question for the next decade. If you spend 4 hours a day talking to an AI that is perfectly tuned to your personality, that never gets tired of your stories, and always gives you the perfect validation, does your brain count that as one of your 5 intimates? If it does, you might feel socially satiated, but you aren't getting the reciprocal growth that comes from the friction of a real human relationship. AI doesn't challenge you. It doesn't need you, and friendship, at its core, is about being needed.
That is a profound point. A friend is someone you have a mutual obligation to. An AI is a service. You can't have a mutual obligation to a service. If we replace our inner circle with entities that don't need us, we lose a huge part of our purpose.
It is the difference between a mirror and a window. A good friend is a window into another way of being and a mirror that reflects your flaws back to you in a loving way. An AI is often just a mirror that shows you exactly what you want to see. We have to be very careful that we don't let the ease of digital and AI connection trick us into abandoning the difficult, messy, beautiful work of human friendship.
I think that is a perfect place to start wrapping this up. We have covered the biological caps, the cultural shifts, the grim statistics of the friendship recession, and the practical necessity of investing in those inner Dunbar layers. It really comes down to intentionality. You have to be the architect of your own social world.
And remember that the healthy number is personal. Whether it is three close friends or five, the goal is to have a support system that makes you feel seen and supported. Quality over quantity isn't just a cliche, it is a biological imperative. If you have those five people, you are ahead of the curve in 2026.
Well, I have you, Herman. So that is at least one. Though according to the data, as my brother, you might fall into a slightly different category of forced intimacy. But I will count it for today.
I will take it. And I think it is important to note that for many people, family members are the bedrock of those Dunbar layers. The biological connection often provides the all-weather support that we look for in close friends.
True. Though you are still not helping me move that couch this weekend. Don't even think about it.
Fair enough.
All right, let us hit some practical takeaways for the folks listening. If you are feeling like your social network is a bit thin, here is the game plan. First, do that network audit. Actually write down the names of the people in your life and see which Dunbar layer they sit in. If your 5 circle is empty, that is your priority.
Second, look at your 15 layer, your good friends, and identify one or two people who have the potential to be closer. Reach out and suggest a high-quality interaction. Not a text thread, not a group hang, but a one-on-one activity that allows for real conversation. And third, be consistent. Set a recurring date. Consistency is the secret sauce that moves people through the layers.
And for the men listening, try the side-by-side to face-to-face transition. Start with the activity, but make a conscious effort to share something real. It feels weird at first, but it is the only way to build that emotional redundancy we were talking about.
Ultimately, your social health is as important as your cardiovascular health. Don't leave it to chance.
Well said, Herman. This has been a deep one, and I think it is going to give a lot of people something to chew on. Thanks as always to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping the wheels on this operation. And a big thanks to Modell for providing the GPU credits that power the generation of this show. We couldn't do this without that serverless magic.
If you found this episode helpful, or if it made you realize you need to call that one friend you haven't talked to in 6 months, do us a favor and leave a review on your favorite podcast app. It really helps the show reach new people who might be struggling with these same issues.
You can find us at myweirdprompts.com for all our back episodes and ways to subscribe. This has been My Weird Prompts. Go call a friend.
See you next time.
This episode was produced using Google Gemini 3 Flash. Text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where our thoughts go from slow, slow takes to facts on cue. We change and follow through. My Weird Prompts, that's the close from sloth.